people and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjo, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey everybody, it's Shipton Steer, and we're welcome to being at the party, pal. We're welcome that you're here. We're welcoming you. Come on, pal. So anyway, hey, this has been quite the week in Los Angeles, Southern California. It's kind of funny because I've been talking to a lot of my Bond Speed Wheel customers around the country, and you know, we start telling them, "Oh my gosh, yeah, we had power outages and we had water going through the factory," and they're like, "Oh, it rained." You know, it's like, you know,
yeah, that's pretty much it.
We have all been, all three of us have been to the, you know, Midwest, the East Coast, where it rains. I mean, it comes down. And here, now we did have areas of Los Angeles that had torrential 10 inches in like 4 or 5 hours. That's pretty bad. But down here in Orange County, we had maybe 3 inches of rain over 48 hours. You know, first of all, when you relate it back to cars, have all of you noticed that in Southern California, it can be a torrential rain pour. It can be coming down in buckets, and people drive exactly the same as if it's a sunny day and the roads are completely dry. I mean,
or
yeah,
I saw a guy last night. He was in a Porsche, and this dimwit was doing the in and out of traffic, and he would pull in front of somebody and put on his brakes. And I'm like, dude, you know, our roads, the problem is, what people forget is that it's not how much water's on the road, it's how long it's been since it rained and how much oil's on the road, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And you know, it's always the guy who does that, slams on his brakes, then into the next lane and causes the accident behind him, you know, and he's long gone. So
this past, you know, like a couple of weeks, I haven't had wheels and tires on my truck. I got the wheels in, but I didn't get the tires in yet. And I'm like, well, the truck would be perfect now because it's higher up. It's all wheel drive. It's got an all season tire. Like, you know, it's usually does when it had wheels and tires on it. So the whole time it was raining, I've had to drive my Mustang Mach 1, but with the twin turbo kit, the turbos are mounted low next to the bell housing. And that's where the air filter's on. There's a new air box that they're developing. It'll take air back from the stock location under the hood, but it doesn't yet. So it's raining, and the whole time I'm trying to look as far ahead as possible to see who's splashing, because I don't want to get this thing into a puddle and have my turbo suck in the water. So
yeah.
I haven't been going anywhere or really doing anything, just because I don't want to blow the engine in this car. Now, water would just get into the turbos and it just wouldn't run. It wouldn't even really but it wouldn't even make it to the motor. I'd probably break turbos before I'd break the motor. But anyway, been trying to avoid
the troubles of a custom car owner.
Well, it's all because I can't get damn tires yet for the truck. The tires I was trying to get are just not around yet. So
it is amazing. We've spoke about it on the show before about how everything is still jacked up, man. The whole supply chain, yeah. And not just automotive, everywhere. You know, it's just crazy. And that is something we're going to be dealing with for a long, long time.
I'm going to end up doing something. Aaron, maybe you have more thoughts on this, but because the truck is heavy, the load rating on the tires is an extra load. It's like a 115 or 114. And the ones I can get are like 111, and it's fine. It's just not exactly what the manufacturer expect. And it's not like I use the truck to tow or put a lot of heavy stuff in the back. So it's, you know, and I get it. You can add a little more air into the tires, you know, temporarily. But that's kind of what I was looking for. I was looking for the factory spec load rating And the 114 or whatever it is, 115, it's like 2,600 pounds, and the 111 is like 2,400 pounds.
Yeah,
and that's just kind
I
of
don't a, think it's, no
it's
big
not
going
to make a difference day to day. Just like driving the truck with nothing in it, it's not going to make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
But I was just trying to get to the proper load rating. And if I can't, then it's fine. I'm just going to end up with a tire. It's a little bit less low rating.
Yeah, but, I think you'll be fine. One of the things you have to remember, Matt, is that all those factory specs, they always factor in the dummy factor, which is, you know, for the guy who has that truck and then is going to haul a load of bricks in it. And, or the, you know, it's like curb angle. If you ever noticed, you know, cars always look great when they're concept cars, they're sitting low and everything. Then when they come out, the curb angle that they all use is overrated because, you know, I've seen it. People drive into driveways at full speed, you know?
Right. And on the truck, especially, it's like the truck is rated to have a certain amount of towing capacity or load rating in the bed of the truck on those factory tires. And for me, it would just be like, okay, I get it. If I'm going to put something in the bed of the truck, I have to move something. And I'm not talking just like empty boxes or some pallets. Like it would have to be a couple, you know, whatever the, it's like 1,000 pounds or 1,500 pounds.
Hey, Matt, it's a perfect opportunity for you to say, well, like if I had 4 pallets of Bravago, you know, then I might have to think about it.
That'd be a little more difficult because that'd be over 6,000 pounds. I'm not
well,
even sure.
There you go. See, but we got Bravago. That's, you know, I mean,
my Kenda tires on the Jeep are, you know, you can put 80 pounds in them. And I asked Kenda, I said, for my weight, I'm running about 7,800 pounds when I'm fully loaded. Normally I'm running about 700 ish. And he goes, keep them at 55, 57, you know, 55 in the front and 57 in the rear. He wants it that the rear is a little heavier. And I said, okay, cool. So that's a percentage of their max load, because the max load on those is where you want the weight. So I first kind of learned this and practiced this on a motorcycle, because if the motorcycle on the track were running, you know, like 29, 30 or 28, 29 front to rear. And when I'm just cruising on the road, generally, you know, I'm running 32, 34. It's usually 2 pounds different, two up on the back. But the second I start overweighting that thing, I'm running 40. I'm running 38, 40, you know, because if you look at the tire, you and you're compressing that footprint, you're dragging that footprint out too much, and you're going to put a lot more wear, and it's going to feel rough. It's going to feel like a soft sidewall. So by inflating it more, you're keeping the shape of the tire intact as well. So you're getting, you know.
So when you're racing your motorcycle, you change the pressure depending on if you race before lunch or after lunch.
that's usually how far I lean off the bike, because I can't get my stomach against the tank. But yeah, obviously when you're off road, you want a bigger footprint for traction, so you lower your pressure. When you're on the racetrack, you lower your tire pressure as well, because you want more footprint.
Just my luck, I'll get that letter. It'll be like, we're recalling your truck because there's an issue with the windshield wiper motors, and then have them deny the fix because they have the wrong load rating of the tire.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Just blame the tire shop. I don't know.
Like I don't know. Like, I told them, I was like, what's the proper load rating for my tires for these windshield wiper motors? And see what they say.
It's amazing what it's become with all the downloadable things and like that. Yeah. I just read last night that the Cybertruck, that people got a notification on their screen that they didn't tell them when, but very soon we'll be downloading a software package that will give you locking differential. And I'm like, why didn't they just lock it from original? You know, I mean, it's like, but.
There was a reason why, and I forgot what it was, but something wasn't working correctly. But it's actually interesting you mentioned that, because you and I, we talked about just coming back from the SEMA MPMC conference, where we go and we meet with the different manufacturers and talk about some of the new products and projects we have going on. And I specifically met with like three companies that have like handheld tuners and things like that, because you can calibrate different things on on your vehicles and different tunes. And now just plug into OBD2 and with a touchscreen, you can change wheel and tire size, gear ratios, yeah, all those things you can adapt to on the fly. With your Jeep, if you had 35s and you put 37s on it, you can plug in a touchscreen and calibrate it. So Holly had already sent me one of their Trinity monitors, but it just monitors all sorts of information on my electric truck. And it gives me more information than the truck has, which is interesting. But I asked everybody about, can I tune or calibrate anything on the electric truck? Even if I wanted to change the wheel and tire package, can I calibrate for that wheel and tire difference? And they said, you can't do it yet. And I said, are there any tunes for the vehicle? And they're like, we can't do it yet. And I said, why? And they said, it's not that we can't tune the vehicle. It's just that every time there's an over-the-air update, it could potentially just erase the tune. And then what do you do?
Constantly be having
And I've had, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 updates on my truck since I've gotten it. So it was kind of interesting where we went down this rabbit hole of just this conversation going, yeah, eventually the truck or your EV vehicle needs to be sort of like your phone, like your iPhone. Like, this is the device with iOS, like my iPhone's got iOS on it. And then Holly's plug-in tuner would be an app, essentially. You tune it, you increase the performance, Ford sends you an over-the-air update, and now Holly's going, you're fine, don't worry about it. Or we've made an update to our tune and you have to re-download and upload, like reinstalling an app on your phone if it, you know, doesn't log you in or doesn't work well with the operating system upgrade or something like that. We have to get into that world. And what we're seeing is the car manufacturers are trying to control the aftermarket process, like Dodge Direct Connect. They want all the aftermarket parts for those Dodge vehicles to go through Direct Connect. Ford Performance is essentially doing it as well because they want a piece of that action. They want their version of the Apple Store, right? They want their Apple Store, their Google Store. You know, when the new Mustang came out, Ford said, it's not tunable. You won't be able to tune it. It's too complicated. We're locking you out. And then we go to SEMA and Ford Performance has a booth there with Whipple superchargers and a tune and go, what? I thought you said it's not tunable. And they go, it's not tunable by anybody who's not authorized to tune it from Ford.
Exactly.
So if you want a supercharger, you could go to the Ford catalog and get the Whipple with the Ford approved tune and do it. So they just want to control that process. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's different. It's just what, it's what Apple and Google and all these
companies have done. You just struck on something. Look how big the dating services are. We need to form an updating service. You know, you have these cars and you join the updating service and we manage it for you through your phone.
There you go. There you go. So speaking of this, so someone I was talking to about the Jeeps, because of my Lynxwell screen and the fact that I have a cracked windshield from the Alaska trip, it's a crack down the middle. It's not in my way. I've just left it because they're expensive and it works fine for now. He said he's
just replaced... ask him for an update to put a new windshield on.
It's well, here's the thing. Yeah. Healing. Okay. So because it has that radar, because it has the adaptive cruise control, if I was to have the windshield updated, now you got me screwed up, Brad. If I was to have the windshield replaced, but the dealership doesn't do it. So the dealership hires a company like SafeLight or whoever to come out and do it. Well, they some of the companies have the software to recalibrate that unit with the new windshield.
Yeah, everything has to be recalibrated.
But here's the thing. To recalibrate it, you need the factory stereo in there because there's some sort of feedback that the stereo gives the computer, right? For the plug-in, it has to all be cohesive. With the Lynxwell unit, unless they put that chip in there or something, I will not be able to calibrate it and it'll fail. And I'll get a failure light and it, you know, won't pass smog and all this other stuff, right? So So yeah, so he says just deny the update, like don't have them recalibrate. You know, that they'll insist and they'll argue, but he says, do you really want to go find your factory stereo, have it reinstalled? He said, I've done it twice, and he goes, now I have a guy who will just sign me off.
That's where the
it's like, come on, coming,
you know, it really.
He said it'll cost you $3,000 a windshield.
Well, so I knew all these new cars. Know this. Yeah, you know, recalibrating every time because of all of the sensors. Yeah, I mean, think exactly. About it. You know, some of these cars have, you know, rain sensor monitors, you know, moisture monitor. I mean, there's so much. It's so
mine
much
all work great. Yeah,
a while ago, I talked to a company that did a like an aggressive lowering kit on an Audi. They went in, measured everything, spec'd out the Audi, put the lowering kit on, put it on the ground, started it up, and it wouldn't move because all of the sensors.
Oh yeah.
Saw the ground as closer, and they thought the car was going to hit something, and it kept hitting the brakes like it would move. So it's kind of a
I had that conversation with a guy that I know from Toyota, who's in their, you know, new car development. And he said, they've been getting calls from all these aftermarket companies about sensors when they raise them.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden it's reading everything. And he goes, you know, and we're telling them, yeah, we have to calibrate everything and get it all certified. You know, he goes, there's nothing, you know, they're going to have to figure it out. Cause it's just, all those sensors, all these cars have sensors.
Well, the complexity now is the over-the-air updates, because when they do an over-the-air update, it could be for something unrelated, but you don't know if it's going to reset a bunch of the things that you customized.
Right.
And
then
what do you do? So that's where, yeah, any modifications that you do, that company needs to start talking to, you know, you, and essentially talking to the operating system. You know, it's like getting an app on your phone. Like, the app needs to talk to the phone and figure out if it needs an update or not.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Do you think the days of building a truck that slammed on the ground with a jacuzzi in the back, are that's going to be a problem for these sensors and stuff?
You're going to have to adjust your headlights.
I think adding the jacuzzi is probably the easy part. It's slamming the truck, and you're right, everything else is going to be out of whack.
Remember those mini trucks when they'd have like two rear axles and they'd put a jacuzzi in the back of it? Was when the van
you're putting a jacuzzi in the back, get the proper load rating on your tires.
Right. That's right. Yeah, now you're going to need the 200 rating.
Yeah.
I found out recently that the Jeep, on my Jeep, people flash me all the time, and it's so annoying. I'm like, my brights aren't on, motherfucker. And it really pisses me off, because driving back from Vegas, it was like every third vehicle. And I think I mentioned before, I had a truck chase me down. It's like I was towing a trailer. The back end's squatting a bit, so the front end's higher. And it's a high vehicle anyway, but they think I'm one of those big lifted Jeeps that are really obnoxious that didn't recalibrate their front lights. Those lights can't be re-aimed. I asked the Jeep guys, and they're like, no, dude, we can't re-aim those. And I'm like, well, do all Mojave owners complain about this? They go, yeah, because they're 2 inches higher than the Rubicon.
And I'm not kidding here, but is it usually a Tesla driver?
Oh, often, yeah.
Because I get it all the time. I was at a four-way stop by my house the other night in my Yukon, and I pull up, and the guy flashes his lights at me, and then I didn't do anything because they weren't on high. And then he just turned his on, like, you know. Like,
yeah, and that's what they do. And it's like, and seriously? So then I hit them
a couple times. Tesla. It must be the way they sit that they think you're beaming right in there. You
exactly.
Know?
And plus, I have those LED lights, and they're a factory headlight. They are factory calibrated. They're factory headlight. And I'm running the factory height right up to about an eighth of an inch. I had it measured at Jeep, and he's like, man, you're really close for having done all this work. He goes, you're way within spec. I'm like, great. That's all I needed to know.
Have you guys noticed a lot of people, or is it just me, running around with their high beams on all the time? I'm like, what is with these people? I see it all the time. And headlights are bright as it is nowadays, but now.
The LED lights are really bright. Well, Brad, I know as I get older, I forget to turn mine off.
We're going to talk about the old thing today. Remember?
They're all automatic now.
I know they're all automatic.
I was telling Aaron off air. I said I was out at the Roadster show, and I said hanging around with these guys now, man. They're talking about, yeah, I didn't sleep that well last night, and I left my medicine, and I got out here. I'm like, oh my god, man,
That's a hot rod world.
The guys go, yeah, I broke my leg jumping off the pier, to get my surfboard out there. I want those discussions, but.
What's really sad about the Roadster show and most of these hot rod events? It's like I'm looking at everybody's pictures and I'm like, was there anybody there under the age of like 70? I mean, I was.
Brad barely made the cut.
Yeah.
I squeaked under there. No.
It just goes to show you that the hot rod world is an aging world, and I don't see as much youth at these events, and that's a big problem, man.
Well, I think the Grand National Roadster Show is a little bit of a, if you're old not school. There, because Building 4, where the Grand National Roadster Show is, the vote for America's most beautiful roadster, that is the guys who have been around the hot rod world forever.
Right.
But you go into the Lowrider building, you go into the Suede Palace, and you got a different group of guys. They're in their 50s. So
they're my age.
I'm not old enough to go to that building yet, but I'm getting there.
If you go to the gaming building,
you gotta be this tall.
Building 12, the gamer building, oh man, totally different scene. So,
oh sure, yeah. But I mean, in general, at these events, you see the guys bringing their grandkids and stuff. I mean, kids are getting introduced, but the hot rod world seems to be an aging world. It's
every
unless you're
once
a supercar,
in a while, you get a group of young guys though that like at Bear Jackson, Chef Tarbell had his 15-year-old son with him, and this kid knew everything.
Awesome. But
it didn't matter if it was a hot rod or a Lamborghini, and I was just like, wow, that's so cool. He was into everything. He was just digging on it, and that's great. We need a whole bunch of those people.
Absolutely.
So that our cars
keep
stay high
coming.
Value in our into retirement. Hey, speaking of value and costs and all of that, I ran across a little article online, and they rated a top 10 cost of vehicles. So cost of operation for late model vehicles rated 1 to 10. Now, number one, kind of obvious. I mean, because they weren't going exotics or anything like that. It was, normal vehicles. And we talk about the Raptor all the time. It's expensive to have, expensive to buy, expensive to insure. And it is expensive to drive. Now, this rating was fuel and insurance for a 12-month period. And they rated the F-150 Raptor with the 37-inch tall option, which, of course, is going to use more fuel because you're pushing those big tires. But $7,681 to operate it for 12 months just for insurance. Wow. And they did it across America, a rough estimate across. But what I thought was interesting was number two. And the reason I found it interesting was because I have one, which is a GMC Sierra. And it was only $300 below it at 7,300 and some change.
Did they say what year Sierra?
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about the later models. I'm sure mine is more like 10 grand because it has the big motor in it.
Yeah. You got the iron block, big block in it.
Yeah, man. And that thing uses the fuel. The 4Runner, it surprised me, was number three.
Wow. That is a surprise.
And it was right in at $6,974. but we jumped to number four, Silverado. That, of course, because it's right with the Sierra, but it was a little less. Now, number five, I have one of these too, a Yukon. So we misspoke. My Yukon has the big motor in it. The Sierra's newer.
That's right. Yeah.
But so I've got two in the top 10. Aren't I lucky? And
sweet. At least
we're gonna skip number six.
Seen.
It was a Q50 Infiniti, but we're gonna go to seven because this one really, really surprised me. And you know those Jeeps, especially when you customize them and do stuff like that, they don't get into the top 10, but a Mustang does.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mustang number 7.
Because they crash a lot.
Now, maybe. Well, fuel cost because your foot's always in it, right, Matt?
Right. Because it's so fun.
Yeah.
But here's a little side note that they had on there that was really kind of cool, which was the most expensive repair parts out of the list. Number one was the F-150 Raptor. So if you got to get any parts or repairs, most expensive. Number two was that GMC Sierra. So that's why I don't ever get it fixed.
These are most expensive parts of cars from that list, because it seems like there's
from that list. Yes, yeah, from that list.
There's other cars with more expensive parts.
So
strange. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
What's that?
So it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I mean,
what doesn't?
Well, because it's like, why would a Raptor part be more expensive than a regular F-150 unless it's it's a specialty part that they make as many? I mean,
they make a lot more. Those are more customized. They're a composite part rather than a.
I got you. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about is the Raptor specific parts.
Yeah, like the Raptor grill, the Raptor fender,
because you know, like any car company, specialty they go parts. Well, we know somebody's spending a lot of money for the truck, so we can send the more expensive parts. Like,
is that what they do?
And that's what I'm wondering too. It's my old argument about buying a Porsche part, an Audi part, or just buy the Volkswagen part, because a Porsche part actually has Volkswagen logo on it, same part number.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it at the Peterson Museum when they're like, we had to change the battery of the Bugatti Veyron, and when we dug into it, it was a VW battery.
Exactly.
The Bugatti wanted, I don't know.
Yeah,
thousands
if you don't
of dollars
put the one with the Bugatti logo. You're totally
I don't even think it had a Bugatti logo. It just had a, I don't know, just getting it from the Bugatti dealer, I guess, cost thousands of dollars. I don't think it makes a difference.
Well, it's like part number 569 that says F-150, the little decal for the back, is $26.95. If you want to say F-150 Raptor, now it's $126.95.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I mean, I get it, but I don't get it.
Okay.
Exactly.
I dug in, and I want to remind everybody, you can always do this. You can hit us up on Instagram at Shift Steer Media. Just DM your questions, and if we find them interesting, we'll use them on the air. You can also email us at shiftandsteer.com. So DM on Instagram is really the best, though. So just hit us up there. And the very first one was more of a comment than a question. It was from Josh T. of Buffalo, New York.
Ooh, it's cold back there.
Yeah, Buffalo, New York. What do they get? One warm month out of the year? I mean, come on.
Man.
When you guys complain about cold, rain, or snow, no, we are not feeling sympathetic.
Hell no, man. Buffalo,
I mean,
in the U.S., it's the coldest point in the planet, man. Yeah. I lived in Buffalo. I've been there, brother. That place can be miserable.
My next door neighbors moved there, and I'm like, what are you thinking? Because I got to go there for work, man. That's, you know, headquarters. And I talked to him a couple times, and he's like, I never knew any place got this cold. He goes, we have more snow. I go, well, you are the only city in America that is part of Canada, aren't you? So, you know, I mean, it's like, but I mean, Charlotte,
I feel
and I
for
went
you,
up
brother.
There.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
One of the years that we went back for the Syracuse, New York show where we did the live podcast for him back there. And afterwards, Charlotte and I drove up to Buffalo. And first of all, I've never driven through so much road work construction in my life. But we got there, and Buffalo, right around the Niagara Falls, was quite nice.
Yeah,
right around
it's beautiful up there. I lived in Buffalo. I lived in Utica. I lived in Syracuse, Lake Placid. I lived all over upstate, and it is gorgeous. But man, you talk about a short season. Whoa. Yeah, I'm not.
That's why
I'm
they need this show in Buffalo. So just remember that, Josh. you know, if we go off the air, you know, you're not going to have anything to do in the winter. So, but okay. I've got a question that was sent in for Aaron.
Uh-oh.
This was from TIM from Newark, New Jersey. And he said, "Your move sounded brutal, Aaron. Will you no longer be working on car projects?"
Oh, that's a good question. You know, moving is always no fun. Where we move to is fun. It's beautiful here, but I literally don't even have a shed to put stuff in. So I literally have a stack of like 30 bins sitting outside on this little concrete platform covered with a tarp because it's still the rainy season down here. Yeah, I'm expecting to have to fiddle on stuff. I did keep some of those fiddly cars, so I'll have to be working on them. But I won't have a shop. I won't even have a garage. I may have an easy up if it doesn't blow over to work under when the sun starts coming out.
We need photos of that. You know, just
I will.
But you've got to put it up on, like, when you jack the vehicle up, you have to put like 4 tree stumps underneath for jacks.
Well, I will be, because it's going to be on muddy ground or grass with a layer of Swiss tracks, and then the easy up on top of that, parked next to my little black trailer with all my tools in it. I just found the spot at the other end of the property where all the service and maintenance stuff is for the vineyard. And I was told that I can take a little plot there, like 15 square feet maybe, and work in that little space under the big tree.
Let me change this. Imagine this. You're working on it out there, the vineyard's in the background, and instead of jack stands, you have wine barrels cut in half and the car's suspended by that.
Yeah, I don't know that I'll be elevating any car on that ground, because it's, first of all, it's slightly sloped. It's not level. And second of all, there's no stability and I will die. So, yes, I'll be working on cars.
The 2024 vintage has a slight air of fuel and oil to it.
Right. I'll overinflate the front and deflate the rear. There you go.
Yeah.
There's my ground clearance.
All right. The next one is from Andy W. from ATL, Atlanta, Georgia. This one's for Brad. Yeah, that must be me. He says, seeing more Bond Speed wheels here at shows. Will you be coming down to see us soon? Well, Andy, not you in particular, but I don't have any current plans. But I am selling a lot more wheels down there. Georgia is a big market for us, and I would love to come down to one of the shows, see what's going on, because we've been selling big wheel cars, pro touring, trucks, and I love it, man. So many great projects down there, and would love to come down. Just got to find a real good reason that would pay the way down, like maybe a live podcast where I can bring my buddies, and you know, if there's any good shows down there that want to have us, that'd be awesome. But thank you. Thanks for noticing. Okay. The last one is Eric S. from Prescott, Arizona. And it's for Matt. What a surprise. Because you know what he's asking about, Matt? What is the most valuable, in your opinion, Fox body?
The most valuable Fox body Mustang. That's a good question. The 93 Cobra R model, there's a few out there with basically no miles on it. We were at Barrett Jackson years ago when my friend bought that one for like 120, and people thought he lost his mind. He's been offered double, I believe. So, and has not taken it. Also,
so he has lost his mind.
The Celine SA10, which I think they actually only made 9 of, that's probably also about $250,000 car. There's a few of them. There might be something more specific out there, but I would say probably a Wrapper 93 Cobra R or the SA10.
Wow. So it's not a 1980 Thunderbird?
It's not.
Wasn't that on a Fox body chassis?
There's potentially one other Fox body car, but the owner is very quiet about it. You never see the car. It never goes up for sale. Nobody really knows what it's worth, but it could potentially, it is the one-off Saleen Mustang that they built for Tim Allen. It was called Casper, and it had like carbon fiber front fenders and Thunderbird headlights. I believe someone in Arizona has had the car for a long time. I don't even know the condition of the car, but or how many miles it has on it. But that was a pretty special car that was really kind of ahead of its time with you know, like a T-trim Vortec on it and the carbon fiber pieces and the change of headlights. If that car was fairly low miles and in really good shape and all the pieces were there, that's probably worth some money. I don't think it is in that condition, which is why I would say the other cars are probably worth a little bit more. I'd like to say number 50 SAC Mustang. That's right. Yeah, I was wondering is the that. Most expensive, possibly I the most valuable car. if somebody wanted to buy it, I would sell it for the right cost. Sure, I'd sell it.
Oh, you're talking about this white one with the Saleen stripes and that the RRR Casper car?
Yes. If you look at that, the front fenders are sloped more. And instead of the Fox headlight, it has a Thunderbird headlight.
Right. It pinches way down.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Interesting.
And it had these cool fans on the wheels, but I don't think they exist anymore. The last person who may have seen the car said it didn't have them on there. So I don't know.
But, that's actually a good looking car. I like it with the Thunderbird lights. It gives it a more sleek look.
Yeah,
a little bit bigger wing. Huh.
Not says bad. It sold at Bear Jackson 2 years ago for $15,000.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. I would have bought it. So would many other people.
Yeah, the heritage of Tim Allen, just that alone, because when they back then they had the race team with Saleen and Tim Allen and everything like that. So that's,
yeah, it was a pretty special car at the time. Now I can't say again. I don't know what the build quality is. I don't know what the condition of the car is. I know Tim Allen, you know, sold it, and he has some story about it. I don't want to get it wrong, but I think he like honestly just like sold it to a cop. Like, I don't know if it was in Arizona or LA or LAPD or just like somebody sold it and he sold it and delivered it and shook the guy's hand and that was it. But I have no idea what the car is doing. But most of the pictures you see aren't with the fans on the wheels. The ones with the holes in it, the phone dial holes, that's the fan on the wheel that they added.
Yeah. Okay. I saw one photo with that.
Matt, what have the SVO Mustang? Is it just because the six motor? Because I think that style
that's a turbo four.
So good.
Yeah. So
I mean,
the SVO Mustang had a turbo four in it. And it's a cool car. And there's some nice examples out of it. But unfortunately, it's just not a very, very valuable car right now.
I know. It never has. And it was limited. It's a good looking car.
I like the look and I like the hood scoop and everything. And there's potentially like a really interesting SEMA build there of doing like an SVO, but with an EcoBoost turbo engine in it. Like that could be kind of cool. But I think they're still, I don't know, 15 grand, 20 grand.
But when you think about Rare, they only built 10,000 of those from 84 to 86. And you know, they made a big deal out of them when they came out. They had great ads about special vehicle operations, developed this, but it killed it because it was a turbo four and not a V8, you know?
Yeah.
It's too bad.
It just wasn't a great performer though. It didn't really, you know, it didn't have the horsepower or anything like that, which is
be a real good candidate for, as you said, putting a different drivetrain in it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure if you go to something like Mustang Week or Fabulous Fords Forever, there's probably one out there.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a number of them. I mean, hey, if you wanted a Fox Body Mustang and wanted a lesser priced entry that you could later put a V8 in, it'd probably be a great, because we know the parts are available to put a V8 in it. You know, that's no problem. So
you can buy my SAC car. It's got a V8 in it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Well, I mean, always send in your questions because it gets great
conversation
going. It's fun. And we see them from time to time, but you know, most of them are complaints, that I see on there. They're, you know, hey, can you guys, you know, tell Brad to, quit talking so much, or, you know, tell Aaron, you know, why is he laughing at that? And, you know, and Matt,
because that was funny.
Matt just throws the F word out all the time.
Oh, Fox body.
Forts,
right? That's
Fox
what you're
body.
Thinking.
Frickin' Forts.
Now we appreciate everybody listening, and, we're going to start throwing some short video highlights up from the shows. So, you know, go check it out on our website and you can see what our ugly mugs look like. So, anyways, hey, we'll be back next week. That's a promise, not a threat. And you know where to find us online. So go check it out and visit us on Instagram. Guys, thank you. Stay warm, stay dry. Spin your wheels.
I guess. Don't let the trees fall on you and roofs get ripped off the sheds.
562 trees fell in the last week here in Los Angeles County.
Well, I think a fraction of those fell on the property last week. It was gnarly, man. It was my motorcycle fell over. I had a bike cover on it to keep the water off it.
Oh, you said it became a
blew it right over. Yeah. I was like, oh man.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.